Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Total podcasts, straight to the heart.
What antiques are we talking about this week?
Well, I wanted to talk about a phenomenon that is close to my heart in maybe not really a positive way.
A phenomenon that is stabbing you in the heart.
Directly in the heart every time. You're familiar with upcycling, aren't you?
Oh, yes. But for our listeners who aren't, what is it?
Upcycling is a method of recycling in which you convert materials and products into new materials.
So it's the reuse part of reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yes. The idea of upcycling, as implied in the name, is to take something low quality and through your machinations make it something nice and useful.
Starting with trash and creating treasure?
Exactly. It is the quintessential trash to treasure process. It does have, an opposite. There is such a thing as downcycling.
Wait, what?
Downcycling is not as weird as it sounds. Downcycling is actually when you break an item down into its base components.
So it's like disassembling, so you can remake new stuff out of the pieces?
Yeah, like where they crush the cars and then melt down the steel and turn it into new steel slag. That's downcycling. It's not less valid than recycling. It all depends on what the original object is, you know?
Gotcha.
So with upcycling, I think the ideal, we'll talk about the realities in a bit, but I think the ideal is taking something that doesn't have any use in any way, shape, or form anymore and creating a use for it through ingenuity and creative thought process and use of other recycled materials.
Very cool.
Which is to say, I think it would be irresponsible to upcycle a car because it has useful bits that would probably be better suited downcycling.
Like chopping a car up for parts to repair other cars?
Okay, wait, I just realized that my head was fully back in the 1950s, and that probably doesn't fly anymore because cars are, mostly fiberglass now. So I guess you could upcycle a car now.
Right, but the chopping up for used parts still applies.
Yeah, and especially when you think about, okay. I knew a guy who turned parts of cars into couches. I struggle with this because it is unquestionably incredibly cool, right?
Uh-huh.
But being a fan of the vintage goods, I'm a big, big supporter of the right to repair movement, which is that everyone should always have access to whatever they need to fix things that are broken. And unfortunately, without any, current federal protection on the idea of right to repair, it's kind of up to each other as humans to, safeguard those parts and recognize what is necessary to perhaps repair another piece.
With you so far.
So, all right, the Sony Aibo, for some reason, is probably the first example that came to mind. They no longer manufacture parts for it. It has a small but intensely devoted fan group. If someone took an Aibo, gutted it, threw out the parts, and painted it gold and made it into, a piece of artwork on their shelf, I would be mad, because that Aibo had parts that could have helped someone fix their Aibo. So that's where it starts getting sticky. And I don't know if maybe that's fair, because how can you expect everyone to know all the time what needs to be retained for repair purposes?
Is what needs to be retained for repair purposes something you could discover through a quick Google search?
Usually it is, yeah. As with many things in this world, a quick Google search would tell you pretty promptly if this is something that there's a community of people who need access to. And again, you see this a lot, even with, I want to say vintage cars because that's what I'm familiar with, but the deeper I get into it, even more current cars, like cars from the 1990s, they have their parts halted pretty much to force people to buy new cars. So it doesn't matter if you love that car very dearly, it doesn't matter, you just get a new car, we don't make the parts anymore, which is why those people rely really heavily on salvage, which they can't do if you turn it into a couch.
Yeah. That's maybe a less helpful form the pieces could take.
So that's where I play a lot of lip service to upcycling is good, actually. I think in reality, I talk a lot of dirt on upcycling a lot because I just don't think anyone is taking the time to see if this is a material that really needed to be upcycled or if it could have been reused a different way.
Yeah, if you want to turn trash into treasure, first you have to be able to reliably identify trash.
Yeah. I learned that, of course, in the My Little Pony community. Yes, those are words that just came out of my mouth. So when I was a little one, I was entranced by custom My Little Ponies. You know, I saw them on DeviantArt, and I was really excited, and I thought that was so cool, and I wanted to try my hand at it. But while I was looking into how people went about doing that, I learned very quickly that there is a code of ethics regarding what ponies you use to customize. So yeah, when you're looking into, for example, how to customize a My Little Pony, a lot of people will remind you over and over again on their websites and their tutorials that you can't just do it to any old pony, because some of them are rare and desirable and beloved, and in general it's frowned upon to take a perfectly good pony and customize that, because you're taking, this is of course by definition a childish view of it because it's toy collecting, you're taking that pony away from someone who might have wanted it the way it was.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Since it's a play tally, there are lots that have been ruined in various ways, and that is where you are always encouraged to go to for if you want to customize a horse. Horse, My Little Pony. you know, lots of them have had their hair cut off, torn out, eyes scratched on, marker all over the body, and you look at those, you go, okay, this one needs a new life, that's the one I'm going to customize.
Yeah.
And I think that hilariously has absolutely set my attitude towards everything about upcycling from then on.
Honestly, very reasonable stance.
Well, thank you. I feel I don't have this conversation with a lot of human beings, which is why we have this podcast. I worry that it comes off as elitist because I'm like constantly asking everyone to be in a constant state of re-education before they like just do stuff, or like that I'm like stifling creativity.
I don't think it's elitist to ask that people be mindful about their actions.
That's all right when you put it like that. So, have you had any, like, have you had any run-ins with upcycling? Like, how have you felt about it?
So, first off, I love the ideal platonic concept of upcycling.
Love that.
That's awesome. One of my favorite things about the antiques industry as a whole is how eco-friendly it is and how devoted it is to making sure that items go to people who want them instead of into landfills. Like, that rules. But... A lot of upcycling I encounter is people taking stuff that is perfectly good and then spray painting it gold and putting it on the Facebook marketplace.
It's so irritating.
So I am also torn on what I wish upcycling was and what quote unquote upcycling often turns out to be.
Yeah, it's a sticky wicket. What I run into a lot, and I don't know if this has been your, like, maybe you've had the same thought process, is that, like, if I follow the platonic ideal, there's still a lot of unsold furniture. Like, I wonder if, like, this isn't unreasonable because there's more perfectly nice vintage and antique furniture than people want to buy, which should open it up to, like, okay, let them paint it stupid colors now. But in my dark little goblin heart, I say, no, no, no. I don't care. This will sit here until someone wants it the way it is.
I think with antique furniture specifically, it's not a problem of oversupply so much as it is, or even a problem of under demand so much as it is a problem of the people who want it cannot access it for our economic reasons.
Okay, that's fair.
And I don't think destroying more antique furniture is going to solve those core economic issues.
All right. So you're with me here.
Yeah.
We should be keeping our little goblin paws on them until capitalism falls.
Or we could just find a way to get more furniture in the hands of people who need and want furniture, and or find a way to allow people to live lives where they can own heavy furniture without the expectation that they're going to have to move apartments every 6 months.
Yeah. I think we did talk about that a lot in
our bottoming out episode.
Bottoming out episode, yeah, where we talked about some articles about whether or not antiques were sustainable as like a future industry.
Which they are if you're not a dick about it.
Yeah, if you're not like a total piece of shit, and if we, you know, take steps to make the economy more equitable, yeah, actually we could. So, chop chop. You guys get on that. Okay, so yeah, all right. You're with me on that because I don't think painting something Pepto-Bismol pink suddenly makes it accessible to an apartment dweller.
Also that. But, hang on. What if we find someone who does really want the piece of furniture, but they don't necessarily like the natural wood look? Is it then elitist to deny this person access to that piece of furniture?
That's what I struggle with. I recognize in my logical brain that actually is like almost a definition act of elitism. Is saying like, you can't have it if you don't take it the way I want you to have it. But I know in my heart that if they told me they were doing that, I would try to make them stop buying it.
Does death of the author apply to furniture?
I don't know, does it? And like, I'm so guilty of doing this. I have, maybe, like, I'm going to try to salvage my image here in that usually I would pivot them to something that I thought was more in need of a resurfacing.
Like, if you encountered someone in the shop who was like, oh, I would love this and I want to paint it such and such a color.
Yeah, and I would say, well, I don't know, it's in really good condition, it would be a shame to paint it, and then I would show them the closest, the next thing I could think of where the veneer had chipped off, or it generally just looked like it had been water-stained to hell and back, and it could use a fresh coat.
Because they're already going to put the work in, so you might as well buy something that needs the work done.
Exactly, and because it's like, I might not be able to find someone else who's already geared up to do the work for this. So this is like really, to me, a match made in heaven, but sometimes they really have their sights set on a specific look so hard that it doesn't work.
You tried. That's all anyone can ask of you.
Because, like, you know, I really love selling junky antique and vintage furniture because most of the time, junky is just the way it looks. Most of the time, it's either completely intact or, like, really easy fix, you know? Usually, like, when I'm talking, like, drawers, the little bars need to be replaced. That's so simple. It's just wood glue. All right, I do have another question for you. And this one's going to be, like, probably the oldest I've ever sounded.
Okay.
All right, what do you think of the overlap between upcycling and people's general inability of the upcoming generations to sort of DIY it?
Is it an inability due to a lack of desire, due to a lack of knowledge, due to a lack of skill, or due to a lack of time and money?
I would say probably the last three. I think most of it is parents not teaching their kids these sort of, like, I know this stuff because my mother took the time to teach me a lot of, like, basic house repairs, and I know that's not happening anymore because people are way, way more busy and there are more conveniences afforded. And, like you said, it's really hectic. People work a lot of long hours, and at the end of the day, you're not really thinking about fixing an old freaking bureau when you could just buy a new one.
Yes.
I wonder what that, like, is upcycling now just something we're selling people? Are people still out there upcycling?
I think it is not as widespread a thing in the general culture as much as it is in the antiques culture, or the used stuff culture. It's not as widespread as HGTV wants you to believe, but HGTV and Home Depot and Lowe's and other such businesses do make a lot of money selling you on the idea that you could do this, whether or not it is actually possible given your own resources.
Okay. All right. I like it. All right. Hold on. I also want to ask touchy subject. Upcycling, and I'm going to put as many quotations around that as could fill the IGNC. Upcycling books into things that aren't books. Your thoughts?
All right. I love it, but it very much depends on the book.
All right. Okay.
Because there are some books that we have a million copies of and no one wants. But there are other books that we have maybe 5 copies of and I very much want.
But Ken, the old ones are the pretty ones.
They are, which makes them very good for arts and crafts. Now, for me, most of my research material is digital because it's all out of copyright and lots of universities have had very fun and helpful projects where they just scan everything in their library that's out of copyright and put it on archive.org or Project Gutenberg, which rules. So for me personally, as long as there is a scanned free copy available on the internet, I'm mostly fine with, you know, carving it out to put booze in. But if you're the kind of book collector who wants to own the physical book, then, you know, you might have a different opinion.
I do. Well, I don't actually have too much of a different opinion. I think for me, it dials back to what we were talking about at the beginning, where I just don't think people are putting in the work. Because like you said, a lot of resources are digitized now. And sure, at that point, I guess it doesn't really matter what happens to the remaining knowledge. But in my experience, and I have a lot of books. All right, I'm probably the most goblinoid about this particular topic for obvious reasons.
Uh-huh.
A lot of books just weren't saved. There are books out there where their existence is the only information on them. And it hurts my whole soul when I see an antique book and I look at it and I don't automatically know, like, does this exist anywhere else? When there's no more left, will anyone know it was there?
So at that point, we need a better cultural library system of storing and preserving knowledge for everyone before we can start chopping books up.
Yeah, okay, so, all right. I actually did not intend for this to go this way, but it's actually looking like a lot of cultural inequalities are at the heart of a lot of these problems.
I mean, I feel like that's most things, but that might just be personal bias.
No, I mean, you're not wrong. It's different because, like, I have seen people that make, like, boxes, and they do the thing where they hack off the spine of the book and glue it to a box or a drawer or something, and it's cute and I like it. And a lot of times I see people do it with, what is it? What are those big books that are full of knowledge that people used before Google?
Encyclopedias?
Encyclopedias. Wow. Holy shit.
That was a delightfully elderly way to walk around to that particular word.
Oh my god, I totally forgot what they were called. I see people do a lot with encyclopedia sets, and as far as I'm concerned, those are cultural garbage. I don't think they matter. I don't think they're important.
Yeah, they are. When you go through them, they are far less accurate than Wikipedia on a daily basis.
They're not accurate. They represent an aggregation of other books' knowledge, often incorrect. I don't see any value to keeping them around like I do with 95% of other books. So if you were looking for an okay to go and do some fun crafts to an antique encyclopedia, here's your all right. Go just do it.
I do have an exception to the encyclopedia thing, though.
Oh?
The Disney Children's Encyclopedia that came out in the mid-20th century.
Oh? Just because it's collectible?
It is collectible, it is narrative, it is beautifully illustrated, and I sold a copy at a tag sale when I was 10 and regret it ever since.
Boy, you hear that story a lot in this business, huh?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I think most people would see a Disney-branded weird thing and go, ah, I don't think this one's going to get upcycled.
Yeah, you'd hope, and yet here we are.
Yeah. As I just feel like there's more cultural literacy around, like, Disney being historically, like, important.
True.
I've also seen, this again, I'm just going to beg you to just do this with encyclopedias and copies of 50 Shades of Grey. The roses that people make from, like, book pages?
Oh, the folding paper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. But every time I see one, I wonder what's on the page. I almost lost my shit because I actually do have an interest in paper folding. It's a cultural interest. Someone was recommending using Bibles because the paper is, like, very thin and silky.
It is.
And that was such a fucking, like, moment.
Well, it's also a book that has never been out of print, so you're never folding up the last one available.
I mean, major caveat to any antique Bible is actually probably someone's family history, so please reconsider.
Yeah, you might want to check with some genealogy sites or local groups before you do that, but...
But usually, I think antique Bibles are big and impressive enough that people wouldn't immediately think to start hacking them up. But then again, I say this having seen someone try to glue one to another one, so I don't want to say too confidently that... That was a real panicked moment I had. It's like in near tears, showing this person some of our actual broken books that aren't worth anything and how you could glue those instead.
Glue a Bible to a Bible. Now I got two Bibles. That's twice as Bible.
Yeah, that's so holy. Like, and one of them I had actually been pouring through earlier that day and had full records of births and deaths. Like a lovingly curated genealogy, like, book. And I was just like, you can't glue it. This is important. Holy shit. It did eventually end up going to an amateur genealogist. So good.
Yay. You mentioned gluing books to books. Are you talking about the phenomenon with interior decorating where you get a bunch of books that are aesthetically pleasing from the spine angle and glue them together onto a bookshelf because you just need the room to look good? You don't need anyone to read the books?
Exactly, yeah. I hate that.
I hate that too.
I singularly hate it because as much as, like, I'm going to grudgingly allow that if you have the money for it and you want to decorate with pretty old books, fine, they look good. You don't have to glue them, for the love of God. Libraries have been making systems that hold books onto shelves pretty sturdily for ages. Like, there are clips to hold stacks of books in place.
There are bookends, which can look pleasing on bookshelves next to books.
Yeah, or, like, have you considered just not fucking, like, karate kicking it in the middle of the night or whatever was possessing you to feel the need to glue these in place?
Now, the other thing is, when you want to create a false bookshelf, what you do is you glue a bunch of books together and then saw off everything but the spines. So then you have a nice false front that you can then put something behind, which is fun.
That is fun, and I like it very much despite myself.
Those books, though.
It's just that, like, it's been ruined for me because I have become in primary contact with the people who will take priceless treasures and do that to them. So it's all soured. It's all gone sour in my mouth. It was a really rude awakening when I found out that a bunch of like the big city rare booksellers actually have bundles of similarly colored antique cloth-bound and leather-bound books that they sell for the express purpose of interior design.
Yep.
And if you were wondering, yes, I do know these people. I've spoken with them. It depresses them as much as you think.
But it's business.
It's most of the money they make, so,
gross.
But again, like, it feels weird to criticize that, though, because who the hell has the money to go out and actually, like, buy these priceless tomes anymore? It's such an exclusive club. However, you actually might be able to scrape together, like, $100 or so to get a bunch of nice, pretty yellow cloth books, you know?
You might.
You know, caring about the past, I think, is a luxury that we can't afford anymore.
We could afford again.
We could absolutely afford again. Consider joining your local union. And get active in local politics. Start from the ground up.
Yeah.
I have seen a bunch that are just current books. Like those false front bookcases where you can hide all your valuables behind the books. I've seen a ton that were just pretty books that were printed currently. I don't know that that's cost effective, but I'm all for it because those all exist in a digital format as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like those special Barnes & Noble editions of books that are all like leather bound and gilded.
Yeah.
And which go on sale pretty frequently. And also I'm imagining you could find secondhand pretty frequently.
I was going to say, I have seen tons of them at yard sales.
Library sales,
yard sales. They all get like tons of copies of these like pretty cheap, but really richly, nicely illustrated books. Go there. That's such a already. Thank you, Ken. That was a wonderful resource for your book crafting needs. I actually own one of the H.P. Lovecraft.
Of course.
Because it's cool illustration. Yeah, because they're nice. I would 100% absolutely adore a false front bookshelf made with those.
Yeah.
Also, okay, all right. I do have a dream, though. When I am rich and I lose all of my morals, inevitably,
yes.
I do want a false front bookshelf that is made almost entirely of really frightening medical texts.
At that point, you could hire bookbinders to custom make the spines.
I was actually, I was thinking that, like, you could use, like, junk books and then, like, print out a fake spine, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's all right, we're crafting now. We're getting crafter mindset.
Got it. We are upcycling.
Do you want to address the elephant in the room, Ken?
I don't know what the elephant in the room is.
The elephant in the room is sewing tables and the concept of upcycling them.
Aha, aha, now we come to the crux of the issue.
Yeah, now it's been looming over us.
The divisive line running down the center of this very podcast.
I'm ready to make a peace offering, I think.
Well, first let us lay out our respective stances for those who have not listened to our Valuing Vintage and Antique Sewing Machines episode or any episode before or since.
Your first episode, basically.
I hate antique sewing tables with the sewing machines still attached to them. They're super heavy for no good reason, and I am fully in favor of just removing the sewing machine part and making the rest of it into a functional table.
I, on the other hand, have historically, in my absolutist way, been in full support of keeping the sewing tables completely intact the exact way that God and the manufacturer intended. And yes, I'll bring God into this.
But you have relaxed your stance, you say?
I think I'm done fighting. I can feel the undertow dragging me.
That's when you summon the lifeguard. That's when you cling to your boogie board and wait for someone to notice that you're drifting out to sea and summon the lifeguard.
Yeah, and then they bring me, they end up swimming out with a sewing table, but the notable part is that the sewing machine wasn't attached to it, which allowed them to bring it over to save me.
I see.
What happened was I had to move one in my basement.
Oh, so you finally had the experience that I had every day at the antique store of having to move one of these god-awful monstrosities. Having to hoist it with your own two human arms.
I've had to do it before, but I think there was just a sheer streak of stubbornness that refused to let me see.
But now you understand how weight acts with gravity and matter.
Yeah, and I believe it was last year, I went to a friend's family's house to help them just decide if the stuff was worth having someone come look at. And they had a beautiful sewing machine, and I couldn't even budge it. And all I was thinking about was, like, how much harder it was going to be to even get this thing out of here, much less sell it. And
because it's heavy.
And the vile thought crept into my mind, what a nice piece it would be if only I could pick it up.
Uh-huh. That's how they get you.
And ever since, it's been festering in my blood. And now I have to admit, I think... What also did it for me is, like, I really started paying attention to the fact that so many of them were not salvageable. And the number of people who are capable of fixing the actual machinery on these things are... They're very few. I do stick by my guns that I think if you use your gut sense and you think there's something special about it, definitely do a Google search and see if there is something special about it. But, you know, go with God and make it into a nice table. Just do it. And you know what? If it's rotten enough, just wrench off the nice legs and make that into a separate table and, like, whatever. I think some things weren't meant to survive.
Damn.
I think this is, like, this is the slow ice age coming for antiques. We're gonna have to leave the sewing machines behind. We're gonna have to be picky about which ones we preserve. Let me put it that way.
Now, I would recommend, when you do chop off the sewing machine part of the sewing table, seeing if there is a local sewing machine repair person who wants the parts, and just kind of hand them over.
Yes, that is actually... Thank you, Ken.
Because you're definitely not going to be able to sell them.
You will not. Give that up right fucking now. You might be able to sell the table if you do something nice with it. You will not sell the machine. And there are actually, for all of my disparaging commentary, there are more than you think of people who are doing sewing machine repair who would probably love to have the goods available to them. So just consider that. Like, I said that fully realizing that we actually have one in our community right now. Like, she's okay, though. She is overwhelmed with antique parts. So, you know. So yeah, congratulations, Ken. You finally pierced the hard shell of my heart, and now I understand.
Vindication.
it's just such a shame because so many of them become terrible because they can't be moved or enjoyed.
Yeah.
And like when you meditate on that, isn't it so much better to just like sacrifice a part so that like the rest of it can live on?
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying yourself. I'm ready.
I am.
I'm ready to admit defeat, and it's better to have something loved and preserved in a way if it can't be its original way. And isn't that the heart of actual upcycling?
It is.
I just wish more people did it that way.
Well, perhaps at least 3 people will listen to this podcast and start doing that.
Hey, you 3 out there, we love you. No, so we watched Flea Market Flip, right?
We did, for our episode Flea Market Flip.
And that was the most egregious offender in terms of upcycling things that were not in any need of upcycling whatsoever.
Yes. Yes, it was.
I think, what was it, like 6 episodes and there was only one team that ended up using actual, like, garbage junk and, like, turned it beautiful?
Yeah.
And if I recall, that was books, too. They were doing the false front bookshelf thing.
Yeah, they did. It was beautiful.
All right, okay, wait, that actually does bring up another notable exemption. I think... industrial antiques, you may as well just go and have fun with.
Oh?
Most of those technologies are non-existent, and it would absolutely be a shame to render them down into, like, their basic material, but when you have, like, a huge, like, an enormous wooden cog, like, what the hell else is gonna be done with it? Like, it may as well become a table, you know?
Might as well.
Or, like, you know, people use, like, wooden molds as, like, lighting, and I can't find any problem with upcycling industrial antiques because there is just no other place for them. If it's not museum grade, then there's nothing to be done.
Parts for repair?
I don't think that those machines exist in the context that they would need the parts.
Damn.
You know, I think there's maybe, if you have, like, some old-style molds, there are artisans that would be interested in it, you know, like old sand molds or something to that effect. You know, glass blowing molds. I think those should be preserved because, like, that's an active art that a lot of people partake in, and I bet they would really love to rediscover some of those. It's like those people that make Victorian candies with the original Victorian candy making tables.
Full of lead.
I think they varnish them. they do something, I know, to make it safe.
I hope they varnish them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they eat their own candy, so it's fine. But yeah, I cannot think of too many situations other than, like, active artisanry where you would have any way to, like, successfully repurpose an industrial piece. It's just, it's all over. And they're huge, and there's nothing to be done with them except for decorate.
Fair enough.
So, Ken, what are you gonna upcycle? What's your next upcycle job?
I've been, for several years now, tearing apart paperback copies of Moby Dick and pasting them to canvas and canvas board and painting over them with scenes from Moby Dick for my own amusement.
Oh, that's right, yeah. You're the OG upcycler.
I am absolutely not the first person to do that.
I know, but it's a fun thing with a book that there are absolutely too many copies of.
And they are all mass market paperback copies.
Yeah. And historically important copies of Moby Dick are pretty easily identified on site. I don't think there's much chance that someone's going to take like a Rockwell Kent edition and rip that up.
Yeah.
In part because they will have paid $300 for it.
Yeah. Yeah, they will. God, beautiful illustrations though.
Yeah.
What have you been upcycling?
Nothing right now, actually. I've been upcycling modern things. I got some toys I'm working on. I've been going through them for sale and finding some that are just like wrecked beyond belief, so they're gonna get repainted for fun and not profit. I do tend to focus on repairing, unfortunately. Although I've been thinking about upcycling my own dresser.
Ooh.
It's beautiful and a sturdy piece, but just the surface of the wood has really taken a hit, and it's like veneer on veneer on veneer. So I'm thinking that might get sanded down and have like a nice coat of paint put on it.
See.
I have been thinking, I've got some vintage lace.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what to do with it, but I would like to do something with it, so please send in your suggestions. I might just sell it for people who have more decisive ideas for old lace than I do.
Email us your pitch for vintage lace. AntiquesFreaksPodcast@gmail.com. Sources for today include 15 years of experience in the antiques industry.
And thinking really hard about old stuff and what I want to happen to it.
Man.
If you have done an upcycling project of some sort and would like to show it off, consider heading on over to our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
Or our subreddit, reddit.com/r/antiquesfreaks.
Where we would gladly take a look at the things you've created, even if this whole episode came off as a little judgmental.
Or you can tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
We really just have most of the social medias that aren't hell to use.
Any social media that where we can figure out how to navigate it without the algorithms showing us things we don't want to see, we're on it.
Yeah, which, looking at you, Twitter.
Looking at you, Instagram.
Yeah, fucking God. if you liked the sound of us talking and would like to hear us talk again and would like other people to hear us talk, wow, this is long-winded. discounting this part, as this would be a serious detractor to your desire to continue listening, consider scrolling on down to where you're listening to this and leaving us a rating and telling people I didn't like how long they took to say leave us a rating.
2 stars.
2 stars.
Get to the point. Oh, man. If you would like to listen to deleted scenes and help support the show, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks and get us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes. Special shout out to our current patrons for filling our hearts with love. And thank you in particular for listening. Goodbye!